Okay, the time is 9 o'clock. This is Dr. Richard Guarino. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Can I get a roll call, please?
1 minute, Dr. Guarino. We're letting the public in.
Oh, okay.
For roll call, Ms. Powell.
Morning.
Ms. Powell, are you present?
Present.
Dr. Kolash.
Present.
Dr. Knopf.
Here.
Dr. Guarino.
I am here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any new licensees in our gallery today?
Not new licensees, but we do have the two applicants for licensure here.
Okay, great. Welcome, everybody. Let's start with tab number one. And this is the case of Dr. Anthony Montoya. Mr. Bohal, will you please give us a board brief?
Yes. Case number 2017-065, Anthony Montoya. No one has signed in to speak. Dr. Montoya was placed under probation on August 15, 2018, for a term of 1 year. Dr. Montoya has contacted the board to request the termination of his probation. The probationary terms are as follows: to reimburse the board for the cost of the investigation within 30 days, complete 4 hours of CE and record keeping and billing, complete all parts of the EBAS exam within 6 months, and pay a civil penalty of $500 that was stayed with the successful completion of the probation. Board staff has received payment of the cost of the investigation, copies of the completed CE, and the results of the EBAS examination. The board may grant the request for termination of the probation, or the board may deny the request and require Dr. Montoya to complete the full probationary term.
Okay, so Dr. Montoya did complete all of his terms of his probation, and he's requesting early termination. He was on probation for about 7 months of his 1 year period. Board members, do you have any questions, or does anybody want to make a motion?
Dr. Green, I'll make a motion to terminate his probation at this point.
Okay, sounds like Dr. Knopf made a motion to terminate probation.
I'll second.
Okay, we got a couple of seconds. I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries, and early termination of probation is granted. Let's move on to tab number two, in case of Dr. James Kelleher.
Tab number two is case number 2019-010, James Kelleher, D.C. No one has signed in to speak. Dr. Keller has requested and signed a consent agreement in case 2019-010. The allegations in the complaint are unprofessional conduct, and as he was convicted of a misdemeanor involving domestic violence. The probationary terms of the consent agreement are as follows. The license is placed on probation for 2 years, must complete all parts of the EBAS examination within 3 months, reimbursement for the cost of the investigation in the amount of $487.61 to be paid within 3 months, must provide the board with copies of all court-required monitoring and counseling completed documentation. The consent agreements also allows for early termination of the probation. The board may vote to approve the consent agreement, or the board may deny the consent agreement and continue the investigation.
Okay, so just a point of clarification that I saw the way that the consent agreement was worded correctly. It said take and complete all parts of the EBAS examination means, you know, take all parts and pass all parts. The only question I had was, you know, it says that the applicant should provide the results. We get the results directly from the national board, don't we?
Yes. But if the national board doesn't give it to us, we require that the applicant or the licensee give it to us, just as a standard term.
Okay. I just, you know, I guess my only concern is that it's an official copy with test results that can't be, you know, fabricated in any way or falsified. So, okay. Board members, do you have any questions on this case, or does anybody want to make a motion to approve the consent agreement?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make a motion to approve the consent agreement.
Dr. Cole,
okay.
Second.
Okay, great. Any further discussion on this matter? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to call for the question to approve the consent agreement. Are those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries and the consent agreement is approved. We're going to move on to letter F in our agenda, tab number 3, the matter of Dr. John Schmidt.
This is licensure by endorsement with PMMTP with disclosure. Dr. Schmidt is signed in to speak. If you please come forward and sit at that table.
Hi, Dr. Schmidt. I appreciate you attending in person today so that we can clarify or ask you any questions. So thanks for coming.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come.
Okay. Can you please introduce yourself for the record?
Yeah. My name is John Schmidt.
Thank you. Justin, go ahead. The board brief.
John Schmidt, DC, has applied for licensure by endorsement for physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedures certification. On his application, Dr. Schmidt disclosed that he was disciplined in the state of Texas and fined $250 for practicing on an expired license. On his application, Dr. Schmidt also disclosed an arrest in April 2002. Court staff has received documentation from the U.S. District Court in Texas confirming the charge and plea. During the review, the application board staff was made aware of a medical malpractice payment on behalf of Dr. Schmidt in 2004. Dr. Schmidt stated that the medical malpractice payment was the result of a patient who sustained permanent neck injuries and required surgery. Dr. Schmidt also holds a license in Delaware, Georgia, Indiana, and Ohio, and has no other disciplinary actions. The board may grant licensure with a consent agreement, and may deny licensure pursuant to ARS 32-921-B1, 32-921-C, 32-924-A5, 32-924-A6, 32-924-A14, and AAC R4-7-90233. And I believe we have an additional statute.
This is Michael Rain. Having reviewed this file, I wanted to draw your attention at least to your requirements for endorsement licenses. Similar requirements exist for your reciprocity licenses, but under your statute for endorsement 32.9.2.03, it says that the board may issue a license by endorsement under A2 if the applicant has not had an adverse disciplinary action against a professional license issued by another state or jurisdiction. And so we do have here a Texas, a couple of different Texas licensure disciplinary actions against Mr. Schmidt. And so that would seem to implicate that statute 922.03A2, which requires for enforcement that you haven't had discipline against your other state license.
Okay, so this is Dr. Garino. Does that mean that we do not have the authority to grant licensure today based on that statute?
Yeah, that is my opinion.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Vohal, is it true, as I read through the board meeting materials, that he did not disclose his malpractice verdict, and that was just something that we found upon an investigation and discovery?
That's correct.
Okay. So Dr. Schmidt, what do you say to that? How come you didn't disclose on your application that you had a malpractice case against you?
I don't recall that being asked on the application. Otherwise, I certainly would have. And I've made full disclosures of all of the incidents to the board in writing for the other things. And when I was asked to make a written statement about that, I did as well. Before I applied for licensure, I just want to make a clarification that I did contact the board, and I called and spoke to Chris and asked him if I told him that I did have a conviction in another state that I was looking at enforcement, but was that a possibility? And he put me on hold, and I couldn't tell you who he spoke to, but he said no, that's not a preclusion. The board would have to review it. Now, having said that, I have taken part four of the board, so if I knew that I couldn't take the avenue of endorsement, I would have gone the other route for just applying straight for the licensure, and I don't think there's a preclusion for a criminal conviction that way either.
Board members, may I ask a question?
Yes.
When did you take part four?
Part four in November.
November?
Yeah, November of 2018.
I believe the transcript that we have from the National Board does not have that score on it.
I did ask them to forward that. Okay. I did submit a request and asked them to forward that, and I'm not going to say whether I got confirmation or not, but the National Boards did tell me that they did forward it.
Okay.
Just to be clear, this is Michael Rain again. It's not the convictions on the criminal side that implicates the endorsement statute, but rather the discipline that the Texas board issued. Because that's, you know, when you come in through endorsement, you're using that, your state licenses in other states. And what the statute says is that the board may grant by endorsement if you satisfy all of the requirements, and one of them being that you haven't been disciplined in any other state on your professional license.
Right. And just to reiterate, before I applied, I called and asked if I could file through endorsement, and I was told that I could, that any previous disciplinary action wasn't necessarily, even though it was written that way, that's the reason why I called.
Yeah.
I would have applied from the other angle.
And members of the board, it's Michael Rain again. When we were considering this before the meeting, that was one part that we had discussed, was that the general new application statute does not have the prohibition against licensure if you've had discipline in another state, but we were unaware of the Part 4 examination completion. So it would appear that, you know, that would be a more fitting avenue that would at least allow more discretion to grant the license. I don't believe that the criminal convictions would be a bar. I haven't really evaluated it in depth, but they're over 5 years old.
It was 2002.
Yeah, so they wouldn't likely have any bar effect. I've never actually investigated or talked with Justin about the idea of converting an application in process as an endorsement to a new application. Thinking out loud, I don't know that we could do that, or if we just have to reapply.
We, in years past, because it's the same application for all three, it was just additional documentation that's required. We allowed them to modify their application and therefore submit it.
Members of the board, if you're following me, then I guess one option could be to effectively table the application and allow it to be converted to a new application with necessary additional documentation and amendments, and to bring it back before you instead
that sounds reasonable.
Is there any other documentation or requirements that I have not submitted, because I don't when I looked at both angles, I don't think there is.
The only thing that we need is the completed transcript with Part 4 and that finalized score.
Would we have needed the the education transcripts or anything like that?
That's a part of the...
Okay, it's in there anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then it sounds like it might not be that difficult. It would just be a delay,
I did go online and at least pay for Part 4 to be forwarded to Arizona. So
yeah, and that shouldn't be an issue. I mean, you've taken it. You know, you took it. So that we have no reason to doubt that. It's just we'd need to get that. But the other concern, I mean, at least why they can't do something today is that this is on the agenda for a specific action.
I understand.
They'd have to re-agendize it as a new application.
But, you know, pending the change of the application, receipt of the transcripts, we can agendize it, do another telephonic meeting with the board.
Well, and currently it's on the agenda, and they have your disclosures about the criminal history.
Right.
I, from a legal perspective, I would have no problem with the board having a discussion with you today about those issues.
Okay.
So that they could avoid having to do it again in a later month since you're here.
Mm-hmm. That would be great.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is Dr. Kolas. That was going to be my question. Could we make a motion that says upon other acceptance that getting the Part 4 scores would be the last thing, and then we could authorize Justin to grant the licensure if that's our determination?
Yeah, I don't have. I mean, just because he already has delegated licensing authority where there are no issues, if you were to express your comfort as a board with the issues that have been disclosed, then I don't have a problem from a legal perspective of, you know, essentially saying upon receipt of necessary documentation, grant that the board, you know, delegates the authority to grant a new application or an amended version. So, short answer, yes.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Guarino. Then let's go ahead and discuss the disclosures at this point. Board members, do you have any questions about the previous disclosures? There was the Texas Board of Chiropractic Examiners fine that was paid in a suspension. And then also there was an issue of the work hardening program and the malpractice case, but also a tax evasion plea versus a healthcare fraud. So does anybody have any questions for Dr. Schmidt regarding those issues?
This is Dr. Tanoff. Dr. Schmidt, just to be clear on the materials that I'd received, it looks like the tax evasion, I saw the backstory. It could have been healthcare fraud, and so instead you went with tax evasion. And it looks like later that was withdrew. Is that correct?
Yeah, it turns out that none of it was true. Just to explain, the entire investigation into my office, I found out about it in April of 99. I gave my records to the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. In 3 years of investigation, they never found any fraudulent documents because there was no fraud. They took the position that because I delegated authority for therapeutic procedures and work hardening, in other words, I let an unlicensed individual work one-on-one with those patients, and I didn't do it myself, that constituted fraud. And I told my attorney that I could prove that was innocent, that was wrong. However, there were times that I was not physically on the premises, and there was some potential liability there. As a result of my case, the Texas board, the president back then, Sandy Jensen, invited me to speak to the board and address this issue in 2007. And the board rule was modified to say that you could delegate authority. The rule was already intact, but it wasn't cleaned up. They did also say that you did not need to be on site at all times. You just need to be on site or on call. So with that regard, regardless of the angle the government took, if I was to go back, if I was only pled guilty to the tax evasion, I could have gone back and potentially had that thrown out. At the 11th hour and 59th minute, the government threw out this idea about taking a tax angle, and my investigator, who's a former IRS criminal investigator, he reviewed my documents and found an error. He told the U.S. attorney, or the assistant U.S. attorney in the case, Ron Edens, that there was a discrepancy, and Edens didn't want to hear about it. My attorney brought in Rule 80.1 in December of 01 to show it to him, and he threw up his hands, and he said, if he's not going to plead guilty, we'll indict him for health care fraud. So then the tax thing was brought up, and a discrepancy of, I think it was $93,000. I think I submitted a document, I believe I did, to the board, where the U.S. attorney just scripted a bunch of numbers. And as crazy as it sounds, I don't believe the IRS agent ever found any documents. I think they were just working off of the information that we provided to them. But, you know, without getting into belaboring the point, you know, it was a very stressful time in my life. It was almost 20 years ago. I didn't know. If I went to court, my attorney told me I had a great case, but if I went to court and I lost, I could spend 10 to 15 years in federal prison. We ended up, my sentencing hearing almost turned into a trial anyway. I did make a motion to withdraw my plea. The judge, in essence, and I submitted this to Lindsey Castro yesterday, the testimony of Ken Thomas from Parker University, he testified that I did not violate any rule, and we made the motion to withdraw my plea on the basis that there was a false fact in the plea. Unfortunately, I was in front of a judge who has had a lot of problems. He was the only judge that I know of that was suspended for his abusive conduct in court. His name is John McBride. Anyway, we were dealing with him, and he, on the record, he had stated, and this is in the transcript I sent to Lindsey yesterday, he stated that it sounded to him like the board, the Texas board, or he called the Texas group, was out to commit fraud by allowing chiropractors to do things that varied with the AMA CPT codebook. And my attorney said that I was obligated to follow the board rules, and the judge said, well, even if in doing so he commits fraud. Now, I contacted the AMA CPT after I was released from being incarcerated, which is a whole other story, but the AMA CPT said, no, your position was right, the judge and the government were wrong, that it's up to the individual state licensing agency. So just like Arizona has a rule where you can delegate authority, that prosecutor and judge would say, no, the board just decided to commit fraud. So when I went before the Texas board, they did not revoke my license, but rather they gave me a probated suspension. And since then, I've been teaching seminars over the past 15 years on coding, compliance, and documentation. And I guess I always tell people I became the guy that I was looking for. But I teach doctors where these landmines are. So it was a crazy set of circumstances. But anyway, I had a decision to make, is either plead guilty or go to trial and possibly go to prison for a long period of time. And I was 37 at the time. I had a young wife. I had a 9-year-old daughter. And it was a difficult decision. I know you're not here to see me and maybe talk to me more in depth, but I'm a person who was appointed to the New York City Police Academy back in 1984. I had a pristine history. The detective that interviewed me asked me if I even had a life. It was so pristine. I went to private school. My father's a retired detective. My mother's been on the board of mental health examiners. So this was a devastating thing that happened to me in my life. As a result, I kind of lost everything. But the one thing I wanted to do was to determine how a provably innocent person could be prosecuted like this and then go out and help my colleagues in my profession, which is what I've done over the past 15 years. I've assisted the Texas Board of Chiropractic Examiners in rewriting that rule on delegation of authority, and I've also assisted them on rewriting the rule on documentation and so forth. And there's more that I've done, but I'll just kind of keep it at that. With regard to that. Now, regarding the malpractice suit, it hit the papers, and one of my patients was in my work hardening program for a week. She had done very well. The next Monday, she came in. She was in a lot of pain. I sent her to a neurosurgeon. I never saw her ever again. And next thing I know is that I'm being served papers. The attorney for NCMIC said, look, you know, you've got 100, 300 policy, and they have demanded the full policy limit in Texas. If they do that and you go to court, you lose, then you're personally liable. So she was just reading what was in the paper and you know, where the judge said, The judge, by the way, asked the FBI agent what my fraud was, and he said, when times when Dr. Schmidt wasn't on the premises, and he said, when was that? And the FBI agent said, well, that was cumbersome and time-consuming, but I guess an estimate can be made. And he said, well, what was his fraud? And he just froze up and said, well, his entire work hardening program was fraudulent. Now, I submitted a letter from a Dr. Charles Crane, who's a physiatrist. He worked in my office, but more importantly, he was the prosecutor's expert witness in other healthcare fraud cases, and he wrote a letter on my behalf to the Texas board back in 2004 saying that my work hardening program was on par with anything. When Judge McBride sentenced me, he didn't sentence me for tax evasion. He said, my ruling is that the defendant's work hardening program is not that in fact, but it's in words only. And if he had been sentenced for his true criminal conduct, he would have been sentenced, you know, for, you know, 7 or 8 years at least. Now, the one sentence that he used to upwardly depart, and of course the Assistant Attorney General would be familiar with this language, but when federal judges can upwardly depart, this judge was known for these upward departures based on that one sentence. About 20 months into my incarceration, the Supreme Court ruled in another case that that one sentence made the entire sentencing guidelines unconstitutional. So in other words, the way I got sentenced was a violation of my civil rights.
Okay, board members, do you have any further questions for Dr. Schmidt?
Now, this is Dr. Kolash. I have a couple of questions. They don't have to do with either of those things, but more toward what he put on the applications. So I can either ask them now or continue.
Yeah, go ahead and ask now.
Okay. So, Dr. Schmidt, on your application, you answered no to the question, have you ever been arrested? But then yes to being convicted and yes to being pleaded guilty. Were you ever arrested?
No, I was never indicted. I was never indicted. There was just a one-page information that was submitted to the court. I had no plea agreement. That was kind of an inducement by the prosecutor to say, hey, the judge, even if I got Judge McBride, he can't sentence me beyond the guidelines, which was 12 to 18 months. And anyway, of course, the judge went around that.
Mr. Raines, if he spent time in jail, would there have to have been an arrest?
I don't have an answer for that as I sit here. I mean, I think the question would be ultimately going to whether he was being truthful on his application. And he's given you his explanation of why he didn't check yes there. And at least I think you'd be looking at it from his perspective, whether he was knowingly telling you something that was untrue. And I understand his explanation.
Sure.
To be based in the criminal law as he's learned it. I'm not a criminal attorney, so I couldn't answer that immediately. But as we do know, he did disclose the convictions and clearly wasn't trying to...
Right. And actually, the reason for my question is to ensure that whatever application for the state of Arizona or any other, that not be an issue that... So him understanding that... the answer needs to be clarified, I think. So it's more of an instructional kind of question. Also, I noticed that under the question, have you ever surrendered a license? And you answered no, but Ohio State indicates that they forfeited your license. I don't know that that's a real difference. And you only had the license in Ohio, I guess, for 1 year. Can you tell us under the circumstances under which you forfeited that Ohio license?
I just didn't renew it. They never notified me that they, you know, quote, forfeited. I never received any documentation from them whatsoever. I just didn't renew it.
Okay.
And that would go the same for Indiana, Delaware, Georgia.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So this is Dr. Guarino. I have a question for Dr. Schmidt. So if you were issued a license at some point in Arizona, what are your intentions? Are you going to open up a chiropractic office or or have multiple clinics, or like what are you planning on doing?
No, I just want to go back to being a chiropractor in practice. I've been lecturing extensively for the past 15 years, and my courses are more going online now, which I don't have to travel as much, and I would like to go back and practice and treating patients.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Kolesh. Do you have another question?
So the only license you've had, Dr. Schmidt, since 1999 has been in Texas?
I believe so. I believe so.
Okay. Have you practiced any place else outside the United States or within since that time?
No, I have not.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's all the questions I had, Richard.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any further questions? Okay, so my understanding is that we need to re-agendize this as a regular application, and we need to get proof of Part 4 to consider that. Does anybody want to make a motion to that, or any motions at all?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make a motion to re-agendize this application through examination. And just based off of the discussion we've had today, I would grant Mr. Bohol the authority to approve licensure once all parts of examination, the test scores have been provided and fees have been paid.
Is there a second?
I will second the motion.
Okay,
just a point of order, Dr. Guarino.
Yes.
Does re-agendize mean that we have to meet again, or did I understand that just Justin would have the authority?
Well, either way. Dr. Knopf, do you want to restate that to take away the re-agendized part and just give Mr. Bohol the authority?
Yes, this is Dr. Knopf. I'll accept that friendly amendment to strike re-agendized and just to provide Mr. Bohol the authority to grant licensure.
What's all of the application Part 4, et cetera, are met?
Correct.
Okay, is that a friendly amendment, Ms. Powell, for your second?
Yes, I second that.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries, and we'll move on to tab number 4. Thanks, Dr. Schmidt, for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Tab number 4 is a matter of Dr. Scott Schwager.
Dr. Schwager has signed in to speak. If you please come forward.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Dr. Schwager. Will you please introduce yourself for the record?
My name is Scott Schwager.
Thank you.
Dr. Schwager, D.C., has applied for licensure by endorsement and physical medicine modalities and therapeutic procedure certification. On his application, Dr. Schwager disclosed that he was arrested in Queens, New York in September 2014 and charged with driving while intoxicated. Board staff has received documentation from the New York Police Department and the Queens County Criminal Court confirming the arrest and charge. Documentation also states that Dr. Schwager pled guilty to the charge and was imposed a $300 fine. His license was suspended. His driving license was suspended for 90 days. Dr. Schwager holds a license in New York and Colorado and has no disciplinary action. The board may grant licensure, with a consent agreement, and may deny licensure pursuant to ARS 32-921-B1, 32-921-C5, and 32-924-A5.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Schwager. Do you have anything to say? We've read the board materials, and I'll ask my board members if they have any questions for you. But before I do that, do you have anything you'd like to say for yourself?
I have no idea what I should be saying.
Okay.
Well, you don't have to
practiced
in
New York
anything.
For over 30 years, so.
Okay.
I'd be happy to entertain any questions that anybody has.
Okay. Board members, do you have any questions for Dr. Schreger?
This is Dr. Knopf. I think the really only question I have and that we typically ask in these cases is, you know, what kind of reassurance can we get that something like this isn't going to happen being licensed in Arizona?
I think that's a fair question. I believe that I've learned my lesson, number one. Number two, there were some extenuating circumstances in the arrest. If you read the actual arrest report, you would see that a lot of the things that would normally constitute a DUI were not present. So, you know, I'm not a kid. I'm an adult man. I've served on the New York State Chiropractic Council board for 15 years, and it happened to be a board-related meeting that afterwards when this had occurred. So,
okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
So, this is Dr. Guarino again. So, Dr. Schreger, where are you at with complying with the state of New York and the DWI process? Are you mandated by the court to do anything as far as anything from the state? And have you met those requirements? Because I'm not real clear when I'm looking at the board meeting materials if that's all in here.
Yeah, there's nothing more to do. Everything had been taken care of. I paid my fine, I surrendered my license for the 90 days, and basically that was the end of it.
Okay, so were you placed on a probationary period with the state of New York at all? And did they require you to do any random drug screening or testing or anything like that?
No, sir, not at all.
Okay.
As far as the state was concerned in regard to my license, it had no effect upon it whatsoever.
Okay. Board members, do you have any other questions for Dr. Schreger? So, Mr. Rain, this is, again, a case where this is an endorsement application, but the statute, the 32-922-03-A2, does not apply in this one?
No, I'm not aware, and what Mr. Schreger, Dr. Schreger just said was that he didn't have any disciplinary action arising out of this DWI in New York.
Thank you.
And then there's no criminal element specific to endorsement or anything that would be a bar to licensure.
Board members, does anybody want to make a motion?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make a motion to grant licensure upon payment of appropriate fees.
Is there a second?
Dr. Kolash, second.
Okay, any further discussion? And I'll call for the question. Those in favor of granting licensure upon payment of the appropriate fees, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion carries, and licensure will be granted upon payment of the fees. Thanks, Dr. Schreger, for your testimony. We're going to move on in our agenda to tab number 5 now for board business. And Mr. Bohal, do you have a legislative update for us?
Let me just say thank you for the opportunity to practice here in the state. I look forward to serving. Thank you.
Yes, so board members, on to tab 5, the legislative update that I have for you is So Senate Bill 1086 regarding temporary licensure has moved and passed through the Senate. It was unanimously approved there. It has moved then into the House. The House Committee on Health and Human Services, Regulatory Affairs Committee approved it unanimously. It'll be looking to get a final vote in the House, and I believe that there's a possibility that an amendment is floating out there to amend it to ensure that it doesn't affect any licensure compacts. I believe the Physical Therapy Association was concerned that it may affect their licensure compact. So I believe Senator Brophy McGee is trying to ensure that that's not going to be an issue. So that may be amended in the House, but they don't foresee an issue of that going back over to the Senate to be reapproved. Once it's approved, either way, it'll go to the governor's office for signature. It has been looked as part of the governor's initiative on improving licensure and getting qualified candidates into the state. So I don't believe the governor's office has any plans to veto it. And so that's kind of that temporary licensure bill. HB 2118 is regarding the board's regulation of unlicensed professionals, and it kind of sets in place how the board should handle complaints regarding unlicensed practice, and then also it kind of enforces referral to the Attorney General's office or County Attorney's office for prosecution, and then does lift or increase the penalty from a Class 6 misdemeanor to a Class 5 misdemeanor, Class 6 felony, I believe, Class 5 felony, to encourage prosecution of unlicensed practice. The two remaining bills are the House and Senate version of including chiropractic coverage and access. My understanding is that they, from the association, is that they have slowed because of budgetary issues, but that both Senator Brophy McGee and Representative Bartow and Carter plan to include that in their budget negotiations, and so it may be part of the budget that will be coming maybe end of April or May. That's all I have for legislative update. I do not have any applications that were approved by the director since the last report that you've approved, so I don't have anything to report on that, but we will provide another report in April for the board's review. That concludes everything that I have for Tab 5. And on to Tab 6 is the proclamation and recognition of Leila E. Schlebach, D.C. If it's the board's pleasure, I'll go ahead and read into the record the proclamation. There may be revisions or, you know, as directed by staff or as directed to staff before accepting, if that's okay with the board.
Yeah, go ahead and read, please.
Okay. Whereas Leila E. Schlebach, D.C., graduated from Palmer College of Chiropractic, located in Davenport, Iowa, in September of 1965, as she successfully passed the Arizona State Chiropractic Licensing Examination administered by the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners on the 7th day of January 1967, and she was issued license number 582 to practice in the chiropractic profession in the state of Arizona on the 12th day of January 1967, and she was appointed to the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners by Governor Raul Castro on the 9th day of July 1976, and she was elected the Secretary-Treasurer of the Board on the 22nd day of July 1976, and she was elected Chair of the Board on the 20th day of July 1978, and she served the Board until her replacement on the 3rd day of March 1981, and she earned the title Founding Mother of the West Campus of Palmer Chiropractic, College of Chiropractic, and she worked tirelessly to promote the chiropractic profession and dedicated many years of her exemplary career to this endeavor, and she was the first woman named to the Palmer College of Chiropractic Board of Trustees in 1973, and she was an active member and participant of the Arizona Federation of Chiropractic licensing boards and the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners and the Arizona Association of Chiropractic. And she practiced chiropractic for over 50 years prior to retiring her license. The Board of Examiners is proud to recognize that empowered women like Dr. Leila Schleibach are a vibrant and vital part of the rich history of the chiropractic profession here in Arizona.
Great. Nice work on that. Board members, does anybody want to change any of the wording on that for discussion? You can make a motion and we can deliberate.
Yes. Sure. This is Dr. Kolash. First, I just want to recognize staff. I'm not sure where this came from, but it is highly appropriate, and I applaud the proactive measure to recognize Leila. So whoever started this issue, I'm happy to see it. I have just an interesting change that I'd like to suggest. So for purposes of discussion, I will move to direct staff to change the last paragraph to read, whereas the Board of Chiropractic Examiners is proud to recognize that she is an impassioned, empowering, and emphatic force for chiropractic in the state, and that she is an important part of the rich history of chiropractic in the state of Arizona, here in Arizona. And okay. For discussion, I can tell you why I think that change is necessary.
Okay, so we have a motion to amend this. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion.
Okay, great. Paul, thank you. And so for discussion, go ahead. Tell us why you think that's appropriate.
Yeah, I would like to see that last paragraph more proactive and in an active voice instead of a passive voice, whereas rather than being empowered, she was the one who was actually empowering, I think, to a lot of people in the profession. And so I think just a minor change suggesting that she was the vital force, not that she was empowered by anyone else, but she was the active force leadership in the chiropractic profession.
So my thought on that is just that, and this is Dr. Guarino for the record, I didn't craft this, but as I read it, when I read recognized that empowered women like Dr. Leila, et cetera, you know, that's a strong statement about empowering women and what the effects can be. But it sounds like your spin on it is making it more about her being an engine to empower chiropractic. Is that your intent? Or am I missing your intent?
Okay. No, that's... Yeah, you're right on point.
Okay. So, board members, what are your thoughts on that?
She did both. She did both. She was a powerful woman. She inspired women and she inspired chiropractic. I took it to mean both.
Okay. Okay. So we have a first and a second, and so I'll call for the question for Dr. Kolash's amendment to the language. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Hearing none opposed, the motion carries, and we'll direct staff to go ahead and make that amendment. So, Dr. Kolash, if you could please submit that in writing to Mr. Bohol, so he can make the change.
Thank you.
Will do.
Okay. So at this point, this is where we normally make a call to the public. We've got a couple of people in our audience. I'm not sure that they're still there because we're joining by phone, but this is a chance for anybody to come to the microphone, say what you would like to say, get it on record. We cannot respond to you, but this is a public meeting, and you can say whatever you like right now, so I'm going to rely on Mr. Bohal to let me know if anybody's coming up to the microphone.
Does not appear that anybody's remaining.
Okay. Very good. So is there a final motion to adjourn?
This is Dr. Knopf. I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, board members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.